Do you think the world is getting better or worse? Unsurprisingly, a huge majority of people today believe the world is getting worse. Maybe this global pessimism is the result of a culture bathed in bad news, or maybe we inherently know the earth-shaking truth presented at the heart of this book. Something is deeply wrong with our planet, and we are powerless to fix it. The great controversy not only unveils the origin of human degradation, but also discloses the titanic struggle raging below the din of pandemics and peril, corruption and carnage, murder and mayhem. In this astonishing work, you will discover that evil has a face, good has a champion, and sin has an end. If you want to prepare for the end of this world and the glorious world to come, you must read this book. Join the campaign to distribute millions of copies of The Great Controversy by Ellen G. White to people in and around your communities. Contact your local church for more information or text us at +27 73 470 3520. Adventist World Radio, SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
It's a Friday, and it's time for us now to go. It's 30. Okay, just turned 20. It's not. 28 minutes before 2, which means it's time for us now to do Chew on That. And we're doing Chew on That with Pastor Andrew Piri, who's going to be helping us chew on chapter 50. Of the book of Genesis. We've been doing chapter 48, chapter 49. Now it's time for us to do chapter 50. But now we're still trying to get connected to the pastor. I'm hoping we'll be able to get connected to our pastor. We tried, but we could not get connected to our guest who was going to help us with our feature at 1. But now it's time for us to do Chew on That with Pastor Piri. Pastor Piri, are you there? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can, Pastor. All right. Okay. I'm not quite sure. I think this is our last chapter in the book of Genesis, chapter 50, yes, that we're doing Chew on That. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yes. Okay. So I am correct. We're doing chapter 50. And this is the last chapter of the book of Genesis. And next week, we will get into chapter 1 of the book of Exodus. And I'm looking forward to that conversation. But let's get into chapter 50 of the book of Genesis. And as always, I'd like to encourage you to read it with me. Do not just take my word for it. Read it with me. And please. Okay. I thought Pastor was talking to me. All right. We have 26 verses in this chapter. And so it reads as follows. Do not forget, we're just reading from the NIV, which is just the version that I have in the studio currently, not necessarily a preferred version. All right, it reads as follows. Joseph threw himself upon his father and wept over him and kissed him. Then Joseph directed the physicians in his service to embalm his father Israel. So the physicians embalmed him, taking a full 40 days, for that was the time required for embalming. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. When the days of mourning had passed, Joseph said to Pharaoh's court, "If I have found favor in your eyes, speak to Pharaoh for me. Tell him, my father made me swear an oath and said, I'm about to die. Bury me in the tomb I dug for myself in the land of Canaan. Now let me go up and bury my father. Then I will return." Pharaoh said, Go up and bury your father as he made you swear to do." So Joseph went up to bury his father. All Pharaoh's officials accompanied him, the dignitaries of his court and all the dignitaries of Egypt, besides all the members of Joseph's household and his brothers and those belonging to his father's household. Only their children and their flocks and herds were left in Goshen. Chariots and horsemen also went up with him. It was a very large company. When they reached the threshing floor of Atad, near the Jordan, they lamented loudly and bitterly, and there Joseph observed a 70-day period of mourning for his father. when the Canaanites who lived there saw the mourning at the threshing floor of Atad, they said, the Egyptians are holding a solemn ceremony of mourning. That is why that place near the Jordan is called Abel Mizraim. So Jacob's sons did as he had commanded them. They carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave in the field of Machpelah near Mamre, which Abraham had bought as a burial place from Ephron the Hittite, along with the field. After burying his father, Joseph returned to Egypt together with his brothers and all the others who had gone with him to bury his father. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him? So they sent word to Joseph saying, your father left these instructions before he died. This is what you are to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs they committed in treating you so badly. Now please forgive the sins of the servants of the God of your father. When their message came to him, Joseph wept. His brothers then came and threw themselves down before him. We are your slaves, they said. But Joseph said to them, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then, don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children. And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. Joseph stayed in Egypt along with all his father's family. He lived 110 years and saw the third generation of Ephraim's children. Also the children of Machir, son of Manasseh, were placed at birth on Joseph's knees. Then Joseph said to his brothers, I'm about to die, but God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Joseph made the sons of Israel swear an oath and said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up from this place. So Joseph died at the age of 110, and after they embalmed him, he was placed in a coffin in Egypt. May the Lord bless the reading of his word now and forever. Amen.
Amen.
All right, Mfundisi, your comments.
First of all, it's the account of, you know, Joseph's father has died. And he's basically, it's just the procession of him going to bury his father.
Right.
And then a short description of whatever happens afterwards. And then Joseph also dies. One thing that jumps out at me is how the brothers now think, because our father is gone,
right,
this our brother will now act his anger on us,
right,
because there's no one to defend us. And so they come plead, and Joseph says, no, the kindness I've shown you is a real kindness, not because, right, my father was around.
Yes,
I've truly forgiven you. I think those are some of the things that jump out,
okay,
at me.
Lovely, yeah. Lovely. All right, first, before we even get into it in full, I must say, the book of Genesis is full of explanations that you only get to appreciate when you read it in its totality. Having read, yeah, the full book and having read this chapter by chapter and line upon line, mm-hmm, it helped, mm-hmm, elucidate a lot of things. I'm so grateful to you, Mfundisi, and your colleagues, the pastors, that come to help us with this enlightening experiences. I thank you very much. So now let's get into it, Mfu. So Joseph threw himself upon his father and wept over him and kissed him. Can we just confirm, mm-hmm, that he's kissing a dead man? Because in the previous verse, Joseph dies. So he's not kissing his father. He's kissing a corpse.
Yes, he is. Would you have appreciated if the author said, and he kissed the dead body of his father?
Well, that's the truth. That's what he did. He kissed a corpse.
It is. Yeah, it is. He kissed a corpse.
I don't know what to make of that, Mfundisi. I mean, we know later on the. Okay, maybe I'm reading too much into it. This, I mean, he's dead. What is he kissing there? He's dead. What is he doing?
He's human, so he's reacting in his humanity.
But our reactions, shouldn't we be rational, really, Mfundisi, when we're reacting? I mean, who kisses a dead body? I mean, you know, but there are those people who don't know that this person is dead, Mfundisi. I understand those who are told, no, this person is dead after he had kissed them. And then once you are told that this person has given up the breath, then you realize, no, he's a dead person. There's nothing there. And then you stop, you get up and you go like David, you wash and you eat. But now you just observe this person giving up the breath. Mm-hmm. But you, after this person has given up the breath, you know he's no longer your father. It's just a corpse.
Yeah.
But you go ahead and kiss a corpse.
Right.
And we are saying this is a person who's being emotional. So basically we're saying people who are emotional can go and kiss graves, can kiss idols out of emotion.
We've seen people do that. I mean, it doesn't justify it. It doesn't mean that God goes like, okay, go kiss corpses, right? But God has created us with emotions and, you know, with everything that's happening in the world. As a result of what sin has resulted in, we run wild with our emotions sometimes, you know. Even the whole spare the rod and spoil the child, as good as it is, some parents haven't applied it in its most perfect sense. Some children were whipped in anger, not in discipline.
Right.
And now their emotions and their personalities are something else because of that action. So it's just us interacting with the perfect God. And he allows us to be human.
I don't know, Mfundisi. I don't know about this idea of emotions being the veil we hide our incompetence, our spiritual incompetence behind. Surely when you know better, you do better, right?
True.
And if you're going to be like Unai, you're going to be fallible, then we shouldn't put you in the Bible as an example.
Oh, no, but... God has to show that these are real people. These are real human beings with real human experiences.
Yeah.
You know, experiencing grief like everyone else.
Okay, let's move then to the flip side. What's wrong with kissing a corpse?
What's wrong with kissing a corpse?
Yes.
Nothing really. there's no deep theological significance unless you are saying I'm kissing the person who is in this corpse, but then that's wrong. So like, you know, the text that we use, you know, for the appearance of evil, for the sake of people misunderstanding what you'd be doing.
What could they be misunderstanding from this?
That the person hasn't, you know, that the person is still in the body somehow, or that there's this, the spirit hasn't gone back to the Father.
Yeah.
Which is the biblical truth, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So Mina as Andrew, right?
Yeah.
I don't do body viewing, but that's me.
Yeah.
I understand people who want to do body viewing. Some have told me, it gives me closure because then I know that somebody has died.
Those are liars, Mfundisi. Those are liars. You can't wake up in the morning and put on your black clothes after you have paid the insurance. You call the insurance and to help you prepare for the funeral. And on the day of the funeral, you're going to say, you want to be sure the person is dead? That's a liar, Mfundisi. That's a liar. That's a liar. No.
So you see, there are those.
You got a death certificate, right? from the Surgeon General. You took it to the insurance company. They gave you money. You bought the food. You told him. You sent messages all over. And on the day, you're gonna say you want to be sure. That's a liar. Let's agree that person is a liar. That's a liar, Mfundisi.
No, but you see, that's a human experience, because somebody's like, man, this was a close person to me.
Yes.
And like, I just, like, I wish I could touch them again, you know.
But you're not touching them. I mean, they're gone.
Or there are those ones who, you know, are going to touch the body, saying, I touched the body, it was so cold, they're gone. And I mean, for me, I account it to my very weird relationship I have with death. So, yeah. I imagine I would have been in the shoes of these individuals wanting such closure, but I'm just different.
Out of my brothers, there's three of us brothers. Eh?
Uh-huh.
I'm the middle child.
I believe I love my mother.
Yeah.
I loved her through and through. But all three of us, when she finally died, I didn't even want to see the body.
You see now.
I did not even want to see the body. I was okay. The fact that the doctor says she's dead and my older brother confirmed that no, it's all right. I believe you. I don't want to see the body. I don't want to see a dead person. And I don't know if that means I am heartless. Is that what it means? Because really, I did not want to see. My older brother also didn't want to go and see the dead body there. It's my younger brother who wanted to see the cremation process. He even went behind the scenes to observe the cremation. Maybe that was his way of saying, yeah, she's gone. She's really they really cremated her. But I don't know, because once they say time of death, no, I'm all right. No, they give me the death certificate. No, I'm okay. I'm okay. I loved my mother wounds, but I don't want to see dead bodies.
So for me, I think it also comes from, you know, the experience of working in a hospital and being the one people are calling, so-and-so is dying. Like they feel like they're dying. They want you to come. And so I'd rush to the ward and be able to see this individual go. And like there's a lot that goes on in that room when this person is dying. And people become hysterical. They will cry. And,
yeah, that's a process of death, Mfunis, and that's not what I'm asking. My issue is when you know the person is dead, you're busy kissing your father there. Mfunis, there's something wrong with that picture. But also
understand that there's a trip that the truth must make from your head to your heart. And for some, it hasn't made that short trip from your head to your heart. And so for some, they know the truth, but it hasn't settled in the heart.
Okay.
And for others, it settles after the experience.
Right.
You know, so but there's that little trip that must be made.
Okay. That's a conversation, Mfundisi. That's another conversation. Let's talk about the embalming. This idea of embalming, Mfundisi. What is this now? I mean,
it's just the process of slowing down versus this body rotting, because it is going to rot.
Why slow it down?
I don't know why they do it, but you know, they'll remove the intestines and all these wet things inside and then sew you back up so you can remain in a certain fashion. But also it was well practiced in Egypt.
Yes.
With the pharaohs and all of that.
Yeah, but they wanted to do it with Christ as well. When they arrived there, they didn't find him.
Yeah, they
bought oils and spices, and they went on the third day to embalm him, and he was not there. I'm trying to understand, where is this now?
That anointing is just regular. It's body care.
Why care for a dead body, Mfundis? That's what I'm trying to establish. It's dead. It's a body. It's no longer Jesus there. Public what health. Were they doing? What is that thing? That's idolatry, Mfundis.
Public health.
Public health?
Yeah.
Explain to me, educate me. Maybe I don't know.
The body is going to decompose. It will start stinking. So what they were trying to do with Jesus was to anoint him with spices so that, you know, the smell was going to be a little more pleasant as he was decomposing. I mean, you know the story of, Lazarus.
Right.
Where the sisters say, but we can't open. It's already been 4 days. He started to decompose.
Yes, to stink. Yes.
Yeah, so
they didn't embalm him.
Well, they wrapped him in thing, which means they took care of the body somehow.
Wrapping,
just throw him away.
Yeah, wrapping him is fine. That's happening on the day of the funeral. My issue, Mfundis, is this process after the death moment. You're still doing things to the corpse.
Yeah.
That's my issue. I mean, if we really hold to our theological stance as far as the state of the dead, the breath goes back to the giver of it and the body decomposes and goes back to the dust.
But wasn't the body created by God too?
Yes, it was created by God, yes.
Shouldn't we somehow show some care to the body too?
Why? It's
Why
dead.
Do we
it's
only not... do it when there's life in it?
Because that's what it's all about. It's about life. When it's no longer having life, it's dust. It's only a matter of time before it becomes dust. So what are we doing with dust?
Who of us goes outside and embalm the soil there? No, Mfundisi. That's what I'm trying to establish. What is that reasoning?
We go out and we sweep the surroundings.
Say that again.
And make it look nice. I'm saying we go out and sweep the surroundings and
yes,
make it look nice.
You're absolutely right. We sweep the surroundings, yeah. We garden, we take care of the ground, not because we have any relationship with it. When we want to, we go and pee on that ground. It's our ground. Our dogs pee on it. When we want, we plant. When we don't want, we leave it like that. There is no ceremony there.
Yeah.
There is no ceremony of taking care of the ground. It's just the ground.
It's really, I think the simplest is just taking care of this creation of God. Even
it's no longer that, Mfundisi. That's my issue. It's no longer that. And I'm trying to understand, are we not promoting idolatry here with these processes of embalming and the processes of taking the body, doing this to the body, Mfundisi, body?
I think the simpler answer is really just taking care of, because it still is God's creation, when life isn't there.
Yeah.
Because when you read in Genesis, the beginning,
he says
he formed from the dust and then he breathed into it. So it's still what God formed, even in the absence of life.
Right.
So rather than just disposing it anyhow, and for the sake of the people watching, take care of it. And when I say for the sake of the people watching, it speaks a lot of who we are in the way we conduct these services as well.
Let's then talk to the issue of God's will. Does God instruct us to embalm? Does God guide in any way, shape, or form what should happen once the body is, once a person dies? Because what we know is, from dust you are, to dust you will return, right? That's what Job says, right? So
yes.
I don't know. Does God say how we should bury? What should be done? These things of embalming, these things of using a coffin or putting in a stone, because here now the issue of a coffin is introduced, and yet there were no coffins with Hebrews. This appears to be an Egyptian mummification process.
Yes.
Because coffins are known to be Egyptian facilities, and that it facilitates the person to stay there up until they return from the other side. That's idolatry of another ilk, Mfundisi. But we're seeing it happening. Does God guide as to what we, who are believers in Yahweh, should do?
So listen to this, right? He calls his brothers. He says, I am dying.
Right.
Surely God will visit you.
Right.
Then and bring you out of the land. Then he says, when God visits you,
right,
you shall carry up my bones from here.
Right.
So for me, I think that sort of settles it in my mind that he's okay with the coffin being used, because at some point they'll need to carry the bones.
Right.
Even
right.
if they try and embalm him for the longest, he's not going to remain in that form.
Right.
But carry up my bones. And before we even start to explore this, the carrying up of the bones was not because Joseph was going to go with them.
Right.
It was a testament and a faith in the promise of God that he's going to carry.
Right, right.
Here. So keep my bones here, because God is going to surely visit you.
I hear you.
Joseph understands, I'm dead, I'm crying.
Right.
I'm not lingering anywhere, but my bones you must keep, because they will continue to speak to you.
Right.
Saying, Joseph said, carry up my bones when God visits. So for 400 years, those bones remained, not because Joseph was in any idolatry or anything, but because he says God will visit you and you will move from here.
Right. I just got a WhatsApp now, Mfundisi, and I think this is a brilliant one. I appreciate this person. The person didn't tell us what his or her name is, but they say, well, just a thought. Remember, during his days, Joseph told his children that he wanted to be buried in the promised land and rest there. I want to believe that they embalmed him for preserving him to some extent. I think that was.
Yeah.
I think. What do you think? What do you make of that comment, Mfundisi?
It's valid, except that he says, "Carry my bones."
Right. I think the point is whether it's the bones or what. I think he or she is supporting the view that the body had to be preserved in one way or the other, and even when it gets to being a bone,
It yes. must be taken to the land of promise, as this person is suggesting.
Promise, yeah. Yes, I yeah. agree with that.
Yeah, I thought also that was very, very. Thank you very much, sir or madam, whoever you are. All right, and then it continues. When the days of mourning had passed. Now, again, the issue of days of mourning. Who prescribes the days of mourning, Mfundisi?
I think it was a tradition that had come up. It wasn't like God said mourn for so many days.
Right.
It was their own tradition that came up.
Right.
I haven't traced exactly where it comes up. It was a tradition that comes up in, yeah.
So
everything we do after death is for us, not so much for the people that die.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you. The person says it's madam. Thank you, madam. Thank you, ma'am. All right. So so you're saying there is no prescription as to how long should the days of mourning be, right?
Not that I know of.
Yeah. So no one could ever say, Haibo, that was too short of a time. Why haven't you taken 3 months?
No. Except like now with the emergence of studies like psychology, we know that grief has got no timetable.
Yes. Some people grieve for years.
For years, yeah. But life must go on. They can't
I agree.
Be grieving sitting in the corner of the room.
And how long then is the right time to grieve, to mourn? Because grief is one thing, but mourning, which is what we're talking about here, is that that custom that I don't know where it comes from, where you have to wear black clothes. Some people cut off their hair, some wear black pins, I don't know. Where does this come from, really, Mfundisi? This idea of mourning in a particular way. The Bible doesn't prescribe how people are going to mourn, right?
No. Not that I know of. These are cultures that arise amongst ourselves. And,
right.
Traditions arise when people discuss and be like, okay, I think this is what's going to work for us.
Right, right.
And when everyone agrees, it's established.
Right, right.
So I was having a chat in Botswana. I'm told it goes on for about a week. In Zambia, it's 3 days, unless and otherwise we'll need to extend, but 3 days, sometimes they even do two.
Right.
My preference is you bury me within 24 hours.
Right.
And you don't even spend money on a coffin, just wrap me and put me in the ground so that the ground can properly appreciate my body. But that's me.
Yeah.
So in different parts of the world, it's different.
Yeah.
And it's based on how people have discussed and agreed upon.
Right.
These things. Yeah.
All right. We are running out of time, but my guests that were supposed to come on the other side of two are no longer coming. Can I prevail upon you that we go take the good news? When we come back from the good news, we continue the rest of the chapter after two. Will that be okay with you?
That would be very okay.
Okay. It's only 2 minutes. Let's just touch on this part then. So we're seeing him giving instructions. That's what Jacob did as well. He also gave instructions as to what should or how he should be buried and so forth. Again, these instructions are not necessarily God ordained. These instructions, once you don't follow them, you won't be going against God's will. You're not sinning. If you give instructions that I must be buried in Canaan, and they don't bury you in Canaan, you're not sinning when the people don't bury you in Canaan, right?
Because you're not coming back for them anyway.
Yes.
It's not like you're gonna come back. Like you didn't bury me in Canaan.
Yes.
You're gone.
Yes.
It's for their own conscience that they do it.
So even if they don't do it, they themselves are not sinning, right?
No, they're not.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then the significance behind insisting that you be buried in a particular place, isn't that idolatry still, Mfundisi, that you're going to want to be buried with your loved ones? I mean, they're not there.
Sincerely?
Yes.
Sincerely, it borders that. Because why the insistence on being buried in a particular place? Even the whole, when you've cremated me, go scatter me on the ocean.
Yes.
You won't know if they scatter you on the ocean or not.
Right.
So it can border on that. But again, remember, God knows we are human. And
right.
At play within us are emotions.
Right.
That are not, like, God doesn't have our conscious and be like, okay, go this way, go that way.
Right.
We run wild in our humanity sometimes.
Right, right.
Even in the choice of dress, even in the choice of apartment, the color that you're going to paint, God doesn't dictate.
Right,
which
right.
We choose that. And God allows it.
So we can simply say that Joseph was being idolatrous here.
Not really.
Well, he does exactly what we've just confirmed is idolatry, Mfundis. When he says he wants to go and be buried with his family in his land there, or in that particular grave site that was bought by his great-grandfather, that's idolatry, isn't it? Because there are no people there.
But then there's a deeper significance to him saying that, because
okay.
It's like, it's a testimony. It comes to be mentioned in the New Testament that, you know, they carried his bones because they knew God was going to visit them. It's also in Exodus 14, 13.
Explain what you mean, Funes, when you say God is going to visit them. Visit who?
The Israelites, the children of Jacob in Egypt. At this point, remember, they haven't even entered slavery.
Yeah, yeah. My issue is not about the living people, Funes. My issue is about these that are dead. Jacob and Joseph wanting to be carried to Canaan. It's worse with Jacob. Jacob, it's even worse with the. It said he was gathered to his people.
Yeah.
At least here, we're not told that Joseph was gathered to his people, but still he insists that he wants to be buried in a particular place.
Yeah.
You were saying it. Go ahead. Mfundis, can you
hello, bye, Jamil.
Ooh, I forgot.
Can you hear me?
Okay, just hold the line, Mfundis. We'll come back. Let's go to the good news and come back and finish our conversation, yeah?
All right, that's perfect.
All right, we are back, and now we're continuing our conversation with Mfundisi Upiri, Pastor Piri, helping us understand and compute complex things that we lay persons find difficult to chew on. And so he helps us, like any other pastor, they help us to chew on these things, digest them, and understand them. So we are trying to get connected to the pastor. Pastor, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now. I was getting a bit frustrated because I've been calling you for about 6 times and it didn't connect. Okay. All right.
I forgot that I put it on DND, so yeah.
What is do not disturb. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I will just. All right. Let's continue. Mfundis, I just got a message now from Pastor Bangis. He's following our conversation apparently, and he's saying, "Good afternoon. While you're at it, please ask the good pastor if there is any biblical significance regarding the issue of cremation. Do we
cremation.
When we do it?" Yes, Mfundis.
That's a very good question. Also, this is me just trying to navigate to get where I can stop again.
Okay.
But no, we don't air when we do it at all. I think that's the short answer, that we don't air when we do it.
Right.
I haven't found anywhere where God says do not cremate.
Right.
Unless you have.
No.
Or anyone else has.
No, I have not. Like I said, and I think Pastor Bang is saying that because I also gave an example of how we cremated our mother and how I stipulated that I too want to be cremated. It's a very cheap way of interment. It's cheap, and there's other people also who are confirming that they also want to be cremated. So
me too.
You also want to be cremated? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think for my children, I do not want, if I'm going to have 10 rand, I don't want to spend any of that rand on funeral occasions or anything. I want my children to have that 10 rand. You know, I the idea of a funeral service, I do not want it. The idea of having people come every day, and my children have to cook for these people and give them. I don't want that. I don't want that. So as soon as I am dead, declared dead, the moment they say time of death, 2:10 on a Friday afternoon,
just like the Muslims, my children, yeah, call each other, come, this is kick, the bucket is gone. And then they bury me the very same day, and they take money from the insurance, they go and eat and have fun. They move on, they share whatever spoils there are, they move on with their lives. This idea of having sentimentalism about a dead person, if there's any live, love rather, show me now why I'm still alive. Huh?
Yeah.
Don't show me you love me by buying a casket or a coffin and having elaborate funerals, buying... No. If you love me, show me love now. I don't want anyone who's going to be delivering any speeches when I'm dead. I'm dead. You want to say something good to me, say it now or forever. Hold your peace.
You know, something I'm learning now is some of the directives that God gives go beyond impacting our lives.
Right.
Well, physically.
Right.
Some of the things start impacting our lives first psychologically. And I mean, now that we know, we know that the definition of health from the WHO is a state of mental, social, and physical, mental, and social well-being. So if one is physically okay, but mentally not okay, then they are unwell. So some of the things impact on our psyche more than they impact on our bodies. And because it's impacting on our psyche, it extends and impacts on our bodies eventually.
Right.
So it's things like that where God now encourages certain practices among the people, because they don't have a direct impact on the body as per se, but that, you know, when someone is a little more at peace, then their body can be at peace. And I think I see that in some of the burial processes allowed, that a person would be given time to mourn, because when they are at peace within themselves, then their physical body can be at peace.
Right.
Yeah.
So here comes a situation that I found rather interesting. Pharaoh tells this young fella, he says, I made a promise to my father. He made me swear. May I go and bury him there? And then Pharaoh says, yeah, go ahead. Go bury your father if he made you swear. Had he not been given the permission, what does that swearing have to do with anything, really, Mfundisi? Had he not been able to keep that promise, why? Mm. What was going to happen?
That's a very good question.
What was that? Would he have been a sinner?
He wouldn't have been, but then again, remember I just said that, you know, some things we must be at peace within, and then the rest of the body will be at peace, right? Mm. So this promise, say, promise me that you will.
Right.
He was not going to be a sinner, but his experience, his life experience was going to be impacted on, because he would have continued feeling like, I didn't fulfill a promise.
Right.
That's a possibility.
To who? Fulfill a promise to whom, Fundis? I mean, the idea of fulfillment.
To my father when he was still alive.
Yeah, the fulfillment of a promise has to do with the person who is fulfilled when you do what you said you're going to do. But the person who stands to be fulfilled is dead.
True.
What do you mean then, therefore, that you're fulfilling a promise if the person who is supposed to be the beneficiary of the promise is dead? He doesn't get to enjoy any benefits of your fulfillment. There is no fulfillment there.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I think for me, when I come and read in John chapter 8, where he says, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free, right?
Right.
So there are some people who are still troubled.
Right.
My last words to my parents were not good.
Right.
And then
right.
they were involved in an accident.
Right.
Or the last things I said to my mother were not kind, and then she died.
Right.
And they are troubled by that, right? The day that the truth settles in them that the mother died, they do not hold a grudge against them, then they will be set free. So just because Joseph is appearing in scripture does not mean he's, you know, he's attained the utmost of being human, you know, because you're appearing in scripture. Mm. If you had lived in that time, probably there would have been a story about Nai appearing here or there. Mm. It wouldn't have meant that you were the most righteous of people, indeed, but just that you were human,
right,
that God was interacting with. And in your humanity, you promised to your father,
right,
and you wanted to keep that promise. Forget that he's dead and he's a corpse.
Right.
You wanted to keep that promise because you yourself had made a promise. And by this, I think I deduce and say this promise was even to himself. Yeah. I will do this for my father when he has died. So to not do that would have been to betray himself as well.
Yeah, yeah. Look for the record, Mfundisi, those people who say mean things to one another and then later they feel, oh, I said mean things to my loved one and now they died. They deserve that. I mean, if you know that you're not supposed to be saying this, whether this person is going to die or not, why are you saying mean things? You deserve all the grief, all the guilt that you suffer. Quite frankly, you deserve it all. You must have nightmares. Because we need to say nice things to one another.
True.
And if you know that what you said, you may have said something in the moment, correct it. Don't pass ways with that person. Don't let the person walk out. Because that person is going to choke on a bone and die. What are you going to say? My loved one, I was mean to them. No, you are mean. It's not just you're mean to them. You are mean.
Yeah,
it's not about what you said to them. It's about what you are. You're mean. Because you're mean, you deserve all the pain that comes your way.
Which I think entrenches some of the lessons that appear in the New Testament, where he says, "Be at peace with each other."
That's right.
You know, I think Paul, your other favorite character, is the one who says that in one of his letters, where he says, "Be at peace with each other," because. Right. You don't want to wake up tomorrow. I mean, I have a niece who was reading, she's Catholic, and she was reading a tribute at church, apologizing to the father posthumously. And I'm thinking, you had every opportunity, my girl, to apologize.
Right.
You know, so live at peace with each other. And when you read these things, you realize that if we followed them well, this world would be a beautiful world.
Indeed, Mfundisi. Indeed. Indeed. Yeah. You know, Joseph, who's want you? Let me not get there. All right, let's move on to verse 7. Joseph went up to bury his father. All Pharaoh's officials accompanied him, the dignitaries of his court and all the dignitaries of Egypt, besides all the members of Joseph's household and his brothers and those belonging to his father's household. Only, here's the question, only their children and their flocks and herds were left in Goshen. I grew up being told that children should not go to funerals, and we're seeing here children are left behind. Is there any significance to preventing children from attending funerals? I never understood it, and I still do not understand it. If we're saying everyone has to grieve, children need to grieve as well. If ceremonies are means by which people obtain closure, children need that closure as well. So why forbid children from going to funerals? Is there anything outside this Egyptian ritual here that says children should never attend funerals?
Not that I know of, except for just traditional practice and traditional experience, where people believe this is too much for a child to process at this age. So maybe not yet. And so children will be kept from certain practices. In certain conversations you don't have with children too early, there's the thought, let him grow up a little and then you can, because then they'll be able to understand. But I've noticed that recently with the children now, they understand a lot. They know too much for their age. Because I'm like, when I was your age, we were not even discussing these things. But kids now, they are discussing really deep issues,
right?
And so when I hear things like these, I'm like, maybe it's different now,
right,
than it was back then.
I understand what psychology says, what cultural customs may say, but scripturally, Mfundisi, Is there any guidance that we get from Scripture that says children should or should not be allowed in funerals?
Not that I have found, unless you found one that I have, you can look either at together, but not one that I've found.
I have not. So what exactly was he doing here? What's happening here? Why was he preventing children from going to bury their grandfather then?
I leave it down to just one, it was a cultural practice. Two, the trip was going to be too long for the young ones to get to this place where they were going to do the burial.
But we know, Mfundisi,
kids can slow you down.
We know the trip was not long. Between Egypt and Israel, even if you were to go to the West Bank, for that matter, even if you would take the trip from Alexandria, the farthest part of Egypt, and you travel to the farthest side of Israel in the West Bank, still, it's not long that you children can't.
By distance.
Say that again.
Even like countries apart. I'm saying, can we calculate by distance how long it is?
We could try, Mfundisi. We could make an attempt. I have not tried. I have not checked it, Mfundisi, the distance.
We could check, just so we know, because one, it was just a cultural practice, and two, it was really that, you know, kids were down on a journey, so let's go with the adults and let the children remain. And I think there was nothing more to it than just that.
Yeah. Okay. So biblically, there's nothing stopping us in them from 613 kilometers. That's what Google says. The distance between
613.
Yeah. So Google says distance between Egypt and the land of Canaan is about 613 kilometers.
So yeah. So there we go. This is like a trip from Lusaka to Kazungula to West Israel.
Mfundisi, your line is cutting. Are you?
I'm here.
Okay, your line was cutting. Your line was cutting, Mfundisi. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, no. I can hear you just fine.
Okay, so you were saying it's
so
like
that was a significant trip to make.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a significant trip to make, and children would have slowed them down. So.
Okay.
A time crunch. They had days to be there and then days to be back, you know.
No, Mfundisi. That's what follows for me. So, verse 10, when they reached the threshing floor of Atad near the Jordan, they lamented loudly and bitterly, and there Joseph observed a 70-day period of mourning. Just there, Mfundisi. This boy is mad. 70 days of mourning right next to the river. So, day in, day for 70 days, Mfundisi. They're just mourning, they are wailing, they're crying. They're 70 days. 70, Mfundisi. Is it me who's flabbergasted by this? What is this now, Mfundisi?
Remember that we said, one, there isn't a stipulated time period for mourning, right?
No. Sorry, Mfundisi. I'm the one who's wrong. I'm reading this out of outrage. It's not 70. It's not 70. It's 7.
It's 7.
Yeah,
right?
7 day period of mourning.
So there you go.
Yeah, but still, it's still days, Mfundisi.
There wasn't a stipulation.
Right. Right.
For how many days they were going to be there, and this is what substantiates the idea that they couldn't go with the kids, because you can imagine a trip that would have taken 3 days on the road,
right,
would have then taken 6 days, and that's just going
right.
So you'd go, and then you have your 7 days, which is 1 week. You remember it. I think it comes to be established later on.
Right.
You complete your week. Right.
Right.
So then after that, you have another days coming back. Those are days being taken from work, because remember, Joseph had to ask for permission, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Ooh, it's cutting again, Mfundisi.
It's been a Is it any better now?
Okay, yes, you're better now. Please go ahead. Woo. Mvu, are you still there?
Yeah, I also remember I'm here.
Okay.
Remember, it became Jewish tradition after that, you know, that you spend 7 days sitting Shiva.
Okay.
Where, like, your friends come and mourn with you for 7 days.
Right.
So after this, it becomes established as tradition.
As tradition. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I want to fast forward, Mfundisi, to the death of Joseph himself.
Yeah.
Unless you want to talk about the brothers, because I thought you dealt with that well, about the brothers, him telling the brothers that I'm not like you, or forgiven. Do you want to talk about that, or we can move to the death of Joseph?
I actually thought you were going to touch on the name that the people watching, they say Abel is Misraim, you know.
Okay, yes. I wanted to touch on it.
It's a Hebrew word.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so my question on that was about people identifying these guys, the Hebrews, identified as Egyptians. So they too were, in their appearance, they were like Egyptians.
No, but remember that he carried an entourage from Egypt.
Yes.
So there were quite a lot of them, and they just didn't move. I mean, it's like when ministers go anywhere, you are not expecting a Vitz or a Demi, or you're expecting some V8,
right,
some
right.
big car.
Right, right.
And so
right.
when they come, people are like, these are rich people. Even yes. when there's like a few dotted individuals that are not as rich as these ones.
Right.
So because they moved in such a grand fashion,
right,
and it's such a grand Egyptian fashion, that
right.
the Canaanites watching this only saw Egypt in that movement, even when there were others who were not Egyptian.
But the people in the caravans, Mfundisi, the people in the caravans were the dignitaries of the funeral, which means it was the dignitaries from Pharaoh's court, the dignitaries from Joseph's court, his own mm-hmm. brothers and their wives. Him, mm-hmm. Joseph himself, and his wife. So the people in the caravans who would have been looked at. The people inside there were all seen as Egyptians, including Joseph and his brothers. They appeared right. to be like Egyptians, which implies to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, Funis, that they were wearing makeup like Egyptian men wore makeup in those days. They were wearing clothes that looked like the clothes of Egyptians. They had cut their hair the way the Egyptians cut their hair. They appeared in any way, shape, or form like Egyptians.
Joseph, I can't say that about the brothers, but Joseph, yes. He was in appearance Egyptian. And because he was one of the people mourning, it makes sense that they would think this about him.
So we have an example of a person who looks like an idol worshipper, but
right.
But still, he's okay with God. God is okay with him, even though he cuts his hair like idol worshippers, dresses like an idol worshipper, puts on makeup on his face like an idol worshipper. It's okay.
He's in the world, but not of the world.
Ah, Mfundisi.
He is a soldier.
Ah, yeah.
He doesn't kill.
So we can allow our children to dress like the world. Like Joseph was dressed like the world. Put on makeup like the world. Huh? We can allow our children to do things that the world, and then we can use the expression in the world, but not of the world.
No, I think to the extent that he could go, he went, and he needed to dress up a certain way for the sake of authority and function. But we know that he wasn't Egyptian in every practice.
Yeah,
you know.
Hey.
But to the extent that he could go, he went, and he dressed up a certain way, presented himself a certain way. But he wasn't a practicing Egyptian, if I could put it that way.
Okay. And then the name Abel Mizraim, Funis, talk to us about that.
So Mizraim, like we said the other time,
that's Egypt,
so
yes.
It was a Hebrew structure,
mm-hmm.
the I-M at the end, meaning plural. Mizraim is distress. or siege, you know, misery. Distress is the word. So because it's Mizraim, it's
plural.
It's double Mizraim. It's double siege or double distress.
Okay.
That's what that word. And Abel is the mourning of the Egyptians, because that's the name that Egypt goes by at this point. It's Mizraim.
Whew. Okay, I won't take that up now for this. We can take that on another day. So the Bible there says, chapter 49, verse 33 says, Jacob was gathered to his people, right?
Yes.
But verse 26 of chapter 50 doesn't say that. So Joseph died at the age of 110. And after they embalmed him, he was placed in a coffin in Egypt. He doesn't get gathered to his people.
I like how you put that. Just a minute. Breathed his last and he was gathered to his people. That's an interesting one. I've never looked at that. Huh. Thank you. I'll go dig into it because I've never actually looked at this too.
Yes. So do you remember what?
Very interesting.
Remember what I was raising about the concept of being gathered to his people?
Yeah. But then if it was consistent, then it should have come up here too, right?
Indeed. Indeed.
That's why I really should go dig into it. What All does right. this gathered to his people look like? Yes. You might have just inspired a paper. We'll see.
Okay. All right. No, that's all for me, Mpunis. The rest will be a result of all other conversations that we need to have. I've skipped some parts because I'm realizing I am going to be giving you a headache. Unnecessarily. It's a Friday, so you need to go and prepare for the Sawa. Thank you very much, Mpunis, for your time and your insights. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Nai. It's always a pleasure having a chat with you.
Thank you very much, Mpunis. All right, that's how we end our Chew on That. It was an extended Chew on That because our guest that was supposed to come through for Prophecy did not pitch. And that marks the end of that segment.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.